Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live today from one of the world's most spiritual places, Mount Shasta, California. I'm down here with a group of wonderful people, and we are having such an amazing time. Last night, we had a visit from a Pleiadian spaceship commander. That's correct. He came out of his UFO to came down to see us. We've also had numerous instances where the Sasquatch keeps stealing our food at our campsite. So we posted signs. We hope he could read English to stay out. But moving right along, I want to thank everyone so much for listening today. Out of This World Radio. The purpose of Out of This World Radio is to make this world a much better and happier place, and I want to thank everyone so much for their beautiful support. We now have over 250,000 listeners in over 90 countries, and with your support, we're hopefully making this world a much better and happier place. Today's guests will have, from now until 3 p.m. Seattle time, we'll be having on Simon Parks live from England, and then the next hour from 3 to 4 p.m., I have about, oh my goodness, 12, 15 people here who've all seen UFOs, Sasquatches, been down to Telos in the Hollow Earth, and can tell some really incredible stories, and so we'll be going into that during the second hour. I want to thank everyone's help so much for this program, including Carol, my wonderful friend and designer who's been working on my radio show now for the past almost 6 years, providing wonderful support. Corey and Saul and Kirkland, who provided generous support for both program and a new library for the Hopi Indians in Arizona. Without your support, we wouldn't be able to be on the air. I want to tell everyone as well that I have a spiritual mentoring program where I help people find their spirit guides and get in touch with the other side. If you're interested, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150 @gmail.com, and I'd be happy to help you in any way I can. Just some upcoming events before Simon comes on the air. On Saturday, July 20th, from about 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., I'll be giving giving readings in Tacoma, Washington, just south of Seattle. Then in September again, I'll be back at Mount Shasta from September 5th to the 11th. The cost is just $200 per person and includes free camping. I hope you can come. Then in early October, from approximately the 2nd of October to the 8th of October, I'll be flying to Mount Abu in India to join a meditation group called the BK Kumaris. That should be really interesting. And then finally, I'll be returning to Cusco and Machu Picchu, Peru from January 22nd to February 5th. The airfares down to Peru right now are not too expensive. My ticket cost $361, and I saw a fare a few months ago for $216, a round trip from Vancouver, Canada, all the way to Peru. So don't let the cost of the plane ticket stop you. It's not going to cost very much, but please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com if you're interested. Machu Picchu, of course, is a very special spiritual place with entrances to the Hollow Earth. Finally, from May 30th to June 11th, 2020, I'll be returning to Iceland. I've been in touch with a psychic lady there who's in touch with elves and all kinds of little people of the Hollow Earth, and she promises to show us a really out-of-this-world time. If you're interested in meeting elves and people from the Hollow Earth in Iceland, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. And with that, I'd love to bring on my good friend Simon Parks, coming to us live from England today. Simon, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you, Ted. And can you hear me okay?
Oh, I can hear you just fine. Simon.
Just with you being up a mountain, I wasn't sure whether I had to shout.
Well, if we have any transmission problems today, my Pleiadian friends said they'd help us out, and they might be able to beam you to Mount Shasta, where we could both broadcast from here, or up to Seattle, or maybe I could come over to England just for the broadcast. So they said they'd help if we needed. So
that's very good. Thank you.
So anyway, it's the vibrations here at Mount Shasta are very high, and when you come into the area, you can feel yourself sometimes almost getting kind of giddy. It's sort of a little bit like what's that gas dentists give people, laughing gas before they drill out all your teeth?
Nitrous oxide.
Right, and cause you more pain than the Spanish Inquisition. It feels like you're on nitrous oxide here, breathing it. You just feel kind of floating around a little bit. So we're all kind of floating around here today. But Anyway, it's a beautiful place, Simon, and I hope someday you can come and visit.
Yes, one day, but I won't bring any of my lovely chocolates or sweets or biscuits because I know they steal them, don't they?
They what? I'm sorry, what, Simon? I couldn't hear you.
I say that they take them, don't they? They've got a sweet tooth up there.
Yeah, they did. We've had a lot of trouble with Sasquatch. Yesterday, we went to a sacred lake called Heart Lake to do a swim and do prayers and meditation. Oh, the views were so beautiful. We could see for miles and miles, like the song that starts my program. And then when we got back, we discovered that they'd stolen the Basmati rice, and then they tried to hide it in a pile of sticks. And Jason, what did they hide that in? Pine cones and other stuff? It was in a pile, right? Dug into the earth?
Yeah, around some plants.
Around some plants, yeah. We found that today. And then the other day, they had quite a – they ate all of this lady's corn that she had for her and her family. They didn't like the sweet potatoes, though, and they tried coffee this morning that they spit it out. So I guess they didn't like the coffee. We posted signs, and hopefully, you know, keep out, no trespassing. Hopefully they read English, so they'll leave it alone today. So I hope that'll be good. Anyway.
Well, you can't really make a comment on that. I mean, that's that. But they've always, I think, Ted, if I remember back to last year, was it the chocolate bars they were taking last time?
Yeah, last time they were taking the chocolate bars. Yeah, yeah.
That's right,
but then I guess they've got a Sasquatch dentist who warned them about getting cavities. So they're following their advice now. They're not eating any more chocolate, but they're sticking to the, you know, safer things like starch, rice, corn, that kind of thing. Anyway, I guess what I could do is leave out chocolates for them. We are leaving out the cinnamon rolls for them with the white frosting. And we put them out last night. And as of this morning, my friend Jason. Jason, you're the cinnamon roll expert here. Have they eaten any cinnamon rolls yet?
No, they're still fresh.
Still fresh. Okay, well, they'll probably be gone by the time we get there. Maybe we should put some sauces out for them, like teriyaki sauce or soy sauce. Maybe they'd like that part, but I don't know. But it should be fun. I'm sure by tomorrow we'll have more stories, too. But anyway, Simon, I'll be more serious now. We've had no announcement from President Trump on anything, not even a little something with respect to the Federal Reserve. What do you think what's happening with respect to that?
I did my podcast today, recorded it, which will go out tomorrow. Excuse me, Ted. And it was my first topic. I said, I know that there'll be an awful lot of people who will be bitterly disappointed because they were hoping for some announcement, even if it wasn't going to be very direct, for some hidden words. And what I wanted to say to people was, look, this submarine situation was so serious that all bets were off. In other words, whatever President Trump had written or was going to say had to be changed. So it's no coincidence that, what was it, 2 days or so before Independence Day, this submarine situation broke. And I think that's really changed what he had planned to do.
Okay. Could you explain a little bit more about that for people who aren't familiar with what's been happening with that, Simon?
With what? With the potential for the president, or do you mean with the submarines, Ted?
With the submarines, yeah, with submarine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I put more posts on my website than I ever had done. That's about 7 or 8 posts as the information was coming in. Basically, the world's media are selling a accident within a Russian submarine as purely and simply as an accident. But we know that mm-hmm. it wasn't an accident, because the Vice President of the United States was called immediately to the White House. In Russia, President Putin called his Minister of Defense to an emergency meeting. In Europe, the European Union called their chiefs of staff together. In Great Britain, the code word is COBRA, and that's a special meeting of ministers to discover what's happening militarily. So right across the Western world, governments were in lockdown. Now, you do not do that if it's just an accident. The Russians have...
Right.
The Russians don't lead the world, but they are not far off it with their deep-sea submarines. It's almost, from a human perspective, you can't comprehend. This submarine can go down something like, 30,000 feet. I mean, it's just, you just can't imagine the pressure on the hull. But nevertheless, they have a submarine that can go down this deep. And its job is to basically either cut communication cables or to lay devices next to the cables so they can hack in to messages. You see, if you cut a communication cable, everybody knows it's cut. But if you're capable of listening in or eavesdropping and the other side doesn't know it, right, then that's very handy. And this is what the Brits did to the Germans when they cracked the German Enigma code. So they have this small, relatively small submarine that can go these depths. And we know that the phenomenal number of officers, something like 7 or 8 captains on this boat. There were 3 members of the crew who were highly decorated, and there was one interesting person who was a civilian. That civilian was either a technical expert or was a spy. What we know is that mm-hmm. the official news is there was a fire in the battery compartment of the submarine, and a number of sailors were killed. Mm-hmm. It is a nuclear-powered submarine. There have been talk of an American submarine that was sunk in a firefight. I don't buy that. I'm not getting any information to confirm that at all. What I think, what my information is telling me, is that there was an attempt to take over this submarine. In other words, there were people planted in that submarine.
Oh.
Somehow got into the submarine. There was a fight to control the submarine, and the Russian Navy gained control of it. Now, that's the only thing that would mean that people like the vice president were immediately called back. Because if there's an accident, you don't go into an emergency. But if there's a potential for a nuclear submarine, now the first thing that the intelligence will do is say, does the submarine have nuclear missiles? This one did not. The next question is, does it have nuclear-tipped torpedoes? This one did not. So the next possibility is there a nuclear bomb in the submarine? And this is a suicide mission, because if that was detonated at that depth off the east coast, then a tsunami would be the result of a nuclear explosion, which would swamp the east coast. Now, that's why America reacted the way it did, and President Putin got on the phone straight away to President Trump and said, we've regained control of it. Now, the only people who would want to steal a submarine and do harm are the cabal, are the rather nasty people. And I think that this happening just a few days before the announcement, but the leaking was done deliberately just before Independence Day, and the bad guys leaked it, and then the good guys then had to put a spin on it. And that was deliberately to derail the potential messages that President Trump was going to give. So there you go.
I see. Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much for explaining that, Simon. You always have these incredibly interesting insights as to what's going on. And again, thank you for explaining that.
Now, there's one more exciting. Let's be a bit more exciting.
The negative forces are just delaying everything. Okay.
Yes, that's what it is. It's not stopping. It's just pushing. It's, what do you guys say? Kicking the can down the road. It's just literally delaying it. But
kicking the can, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's something exciting here. When you get back home, Ted, and your audience can do this tonight or tomorrow, look at some of the pictures of the firework display. There was a fabulous firework display over the National Mall. Look at the pictures, and there's one particular big firework that goes off. There is a UFO. It's a triangular craft that appears, and I've got some blow-ups of that. There's not a trick. There genuinely is a spacecraft there with the firework display. Now, we do have a link, because during the speech, which I did sit through, I made sure I watched it live, President Trump makes a very dramatic point about the Space Force. He says, we're just about to have the Space Force. And all eyes are looking up at all the different helicopters and aircraft. So it's no coincidence, I think, that whenever all the eyes are up at nighttime for the firework display, there is undoubtedly a triangular spacecraft there and others as well. So I think that that was also there. It's what Trump's calling the secret space group, but he's calling the Space Force. I think they were there. So there was some disclosure, but not the disclosure people wanted. People wanted to hear that John F. Kennedy Jr. was coming up. They wanted to hear that the Federal Reserve. Right. None of that. And that, I think, is because of what happened to the submarines.
Interesting. When I was writing my book a couple of years ago, Simon, Messages from the Masters, I was in touch. I've been in touch with the Galactics now for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. And they said that they stopped several firings of nuclear-tipped missiles, both from the previous Soviet Union to the United States and vice versa, from the U.S. to the Soviet Union as well, many times. I don't know. I can't remember now. 8, 10, 12 times. And let's say the cabal had been successful. They'd taken over the submarine. They were able to shoot off a nuclear weapon. Do you think that the Galactics or the good guys, the good DTs, would step in and stop any kind of nuclear holocaust?
I've absolutely no doubt they would, because they've too much investment in this Earth to let it be destroyed. It might well be that they already were having an involvement. That's why the good guys were able to gain control of the submarine. It's highly suspicious that there was a fire. On my website, before the official news broke, I said that I had been told that the media were going to be ordered to carry the story that there was a fire in the engine room. Now, I wrote that, you can check on my website, before anything broke. And then the next morning, they're saying there was a fire in the battery compartment. So the world's media have been given a story, and they don't have any other information. So they're going to run with that. I actually believe there was literally a small arms firefight in that part. You have to understand that the metal of those submarines are incredibly strong and probably could resist a bullet. So you potentially could have a traditional firefight with small arms, and it's not like firing in an aeroplane where you could puncture the aircraft. But it's been contained. But the problem, I think, is that as a person said to me, does this mean the cabal are winning? And I said, no, it doesn't, but it means the cards have all been shuffled and have been redealt. And that's what we are now. So we're now going into a period where we're having to find our way again, I think.
Oh, wow. Well, let's say some prayers and good wishes to the good people and the governments of the world and light workers around the world to stop any kind of nuclear holocaust or engineered conflict. I know most people, the majority of the people in the world, want a beautiful planet in peace and harmony, and they're tired of fighting. And I'm glad things have been gotten under control. But like you said, the cards have been reshuffled, so we'll wait for the next, see what happens next. So this, according to my galactic friends, this is the most, this is the biggest show in the universe right now, what's happening here on Earth. There's no other planet where the stakes are so high and where we play a really pivotal part, I think a pivotal part, a very important part in the evolution of this solar system and this universe as well.
Well, we had a small eclipse, and very importantly, we had a influx of very powerful energy. And people who are reporting on it, in my opinion, are using the wrong terminology. They're saying that the Earth's magnetic field collapsed. That's because they are interpreting graphs, they're interpreting imagery. The reality is that the Earth's magnetic field did not collapse, it parted to allow this energy through. So the Earth over the weekend was bathed with a very unique high frequency energy, not just high frequency, but of a certain frequency that we've not had before. I had and that's unusual for me to have a big headache. I had a headache over the Saturday and what have you. And there's a lot of people who've gone through this energy shift. And I think there's a lot of people who've been asleep, unaware, unawake, and I think now they've also been triggered. So that's a very powerful thing. And just to calm people down, the energy shield returned to the earth very quickly after the wave had passed through. So I look on this as coming from galactic center. I don't think this is coming from aliens. I believe it's galactic center. I think it's part of the evolutionary program. And don't worry if you were down in your basement. These waves will pass through concrete, steel. So it doesn't matter where you were, you're going to get them. Now, how you develop is how you choose to develop. So you have now received the key codes from galactic center. If you choose to evolve, you will. If you choose to stay in this paradigm, you will also stay in it. So it's very exciting. So on the one hand, we had this rather downbeat stuff about the submarine, but on the other hand, we had this really exciting inrush of energy.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay. Well, it's certainly an exciting time to be alive, Simon. And it's never a dull moment right now. Never a dull moment. And I'm out in California right now. And of course, we got news. You had this on your post that a 6.4 earthquake happened down in Southern California, but such a little loss of life. And I personally think, I love your opinion on this too, Simon. I think we're being protected by higher forces here. I mean, because it could have been a lot worse and a lot more damage than we got.
Yes, I think the damage was more than the loss of life. I think that 6.4, we could have expected a great deal more. The official people are saying, well, it's because it wasn't near the cities. That's not really true, because an earthquake has an effect over a wide area. I certainly think that there was something beneficial muffling or damping down the effect of it. And I did make the point in my message on the website. I said it's really amazing there's been such a little loss of life. I and others have predicted these quakes in the California region. There's going to be more to come. Let's just hope that whoever is looking out for everybody still continues to look out for us all.
Yeah, and I think they will. Yeah, I really think they will. We've come so far, and I think the Supreme Being, the entity who created all this, has a big stake in all of this, and God, if you will, is not going to let us, the Supreme Being is not going to let us destroy ourselves after coming so far for so many thousands of years to get to this point in time. It's very interesting. I always realize I'm in a ley line and sometimes in a vortex, a dimensional vortex, time that vortex, because what happens, Simon, the clocks start showing different times. Both on my watch here, and also I don't have my computer with me, but on different iPhones and Androids around here, all are showing different times. Let's see. Okay, there's another time. One shows 2:27, another is 2:26, another shows 2:24, 2:25. So anyway, now it's speeded up. But at any rate, have you ever had that happen to you, Simon, when you're in a place and the time starts varying between different time instruments?
I've not had it like that. I had an occasion where, about 2010, I'd come down about, I don't know, just before midnight, and I made myself a little bit of cheese on toast, 2 o'clock in the midnight it was. I made myself a little bit of cheese on toast, and I thought I made myself a hot drink. I don't think I did now. And then I looked at the clock and 1.5 hours had gone by. So what I've had is what people call missing time. It's not quite missing time, but I've often had a case where I think maybe I've had 15 minutes or 20 minutes. And then when I look at the clock, I've lost 1.5 hours or 2 hours. And I think, well, where the heck has that gone? So I get that a lot, but I don't have a situation where I have different timepieces giving me different times. But that's because you're on an energy field, I think, where you are at the moment.
Right. And it's funny, but you walk in that kind of energy field. I've also run into time dimensional ships where I walk like 20 feet or 30 feet any one which way, time literally slows down or speeds up. There was one place in my foster mother's place in Oregon years ago where I went, and time slowed down 2.5 hours on my cell phone versus my regular clock. And then when I left the area and I drove off to back home, the time it came up by 2.5 hours back to what my clock said. So it was just anyway, it was an interesting experience. So where the time just
it's funny, Ted, because there are certain places on the earth where these phenomena that we can't easily explain do take place, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. they can also take place around people, and it's not about the location, it's about the individual. So it can be both geographical, fixed in a set place. Sometimes these energy fields move around, they move around the earth, but it can also be about a person. A person can, from time to time, trigger something. You see?
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting comment. Thank you for sharing that, Simon, because I've wondered myself about that. I wanted to let you know that Marius and Nadine are here with me. They're from the Connecting Consciousness Group in Germany, and they're saying Guten Tag. That means hello. Hello
well,
today.
I'm delighted that some Connecting Consciousness members are there. The problem now is that I expect them to write a small little report to share with their Connecting Consciousness members in Germany, and maybe do that, and that would be really helpful to share it. So thank you to them for going.
They're listening now. I'm about 15, 20 feet away from them right now. They're listening right now. They're saying thank you. It's Marius and Nadine.
Yes. No, that's
also,
great.
We met a wonderful – we met another wonderful gentleman named Ehrlich. He was quite a character in the Frankfurt Cologne area, but he was also a member of Connecting Consciousness. And I know that Ehrlich is listening today as well in Germany. He's a great guy. We're tentatively planning a conference in Dresden, Germany, November 2nd and 3rd. I don't know if you'd love to. You're welcome to come if you like, Simon. We can discuss that off air, but I just wanted to throw that out if you like.
I think it's very important that Germany gets some highlighting because it's a center of Europe, and there's more exciting things coming Germany's way. So the more spiritual stuff that goes on in Germany, I think the better.
Yeah, absolutely. We were in Dresden recently giving presentations, and a lot of very spiritual people in Dresden. Of course, Dresden suffered horribly in World War II, was bombed at the end of the war, a lot of firestorms, but there's a lot of – the city's been rebuilt. There's a vibrancy there, and there's a lot of spiritual energy in Dresden itself. It's a beautiful city, very beautiful city. And this – I guess this leads me into my next question. I had a question from Susan in Vancouver, Canada, came to me last night. She asked about the light, and it was very interesting. I think you've talked about this before where so many people say that after you pass on, Simon, a light appears – and you go through the light, you meet your relatives on the other side, then you have like a life review, you have a big party that you're back on the other side, then you have a life review, and then you plan out your next life. But she was saying to me last night that it's actually a trap that to get you in the revolving cycle of karma here on planet Earth, so you don't escape. Would love your comments or perspective on that.
I think about 5 or 6, maybe longer now, I took us into this discussion as a community, really. And I did get a lot of stick, as we say in Great Britain, to start with, and then actually others came out and began to back me up. And first I'd preface it by saying, we know what Hollywood is, so let's not do what Hollywood tells us. And whenever we see a film about death or angels, we're shown a corridor of light and some angel at the end of it. It's not unlike a moth that is drawn to a bright light. Humans have eyes that operate in the light and don't do so well in the dark, and so we fall asleep at nighttime. So if you're in darkness and you're offered light, your programmed reaction is to move towards the light. This is the point of it. This is the trap. This is the trick. And I know that there are many, many religious people who, you know, when they pass on, they are expecting Jesus or Mary or somebody to come and collect them. And I I came out and publicly said, look, I'm afraid that in the vast majority of these cases, this is just a hologram. And what I teach is that you say, I want to go back to source. And when you see the light appear, just turn your back on it. Because you see, when you pass on, you don't know you're dead. You don't know you're dead until you try to move your body, because you're not dead. But when you try to move your arms and legs and they don't move, you think, oh my goodness me, I'm dead. But you're not. You just physically can't move that body any longer. And then something will appear and says, come with me, I'm going to take you to the light. And you say, no, I want to return to source. And either you're going to be successful and you'll get to source, and then you can choose where you will go, or I'm afraid they wear you down and then you say, oh, I just can't do this anymore, and they just recycle you. So just say, I want to go to source.
Huh, interesting. This is opening up a discussion that I've thought about before, and I want to thank Susan for her question yesterday. Brings up a lot of issues. I'll have to talk to my spirit family on the other side too to see what they say. Thank you. Now, from what I've heard is that the Anunnaki, of course, fiddled with our genetics many thousands of years ago to create it like the slave species, so we would mine gold for them and extract other resources. Do you think this is part of it, part of that, to keep us locked into the endless cycle of karma here on Mother Earth?
No, absolutely not. The Anunnaki are much more recent. The trap that we're talking about is much more ancient. The Anunnaki were also trapped in this. They couldn't escape either. This is the whole point. The Anunnaki were not the creatures that made us mine gold. The Anunnaki were not the creatures that crafted humanity, Adam and Eve. The Anunnaki were a split race, half human, half reptilian, and they were the shopkeepers. They were the managers who were left in charge of the earth while the real bosses disappeared off on their planet X, or whatever you want to call it, for 26,500 years.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I can hear you. Hello.
Okay, good. I lost you.
What bit did you hear?
I lost you there, Simon. Good, you're back. I heard you. I heard we started. You started asking. You said that the Anunnaki were a split race, and then I lost you after that.
Okay. All right. Let's try again. So the Anunnaki were split, half human, half reptilian. And they were not the creatures that created Adam and Eve, the humankind. The Anunnaki were the managers. They were the shopkeepers. The real bosses, full reptilians, went onto their planet X for their 26,500-year journey. The Anunnaki were the ones who became the pharaohs of Egypt. They were the ones that became the leaders of Babylon or Sumeria. But the real power base was off the planet. And the Anunnaki today have degenerated into the leaders of this earth. So the very powerful men are descendants from that, but have degenerated in the sense that they have turned their back on the orders they were given, and they are now just running the planet for themselves. And that's why the Vatican has the infrared telescope, which of course the Vatican calls Lucifer, looking out to see the return of Planet X, because these bad guys are very worried that when the bosses come back, they have to account for what they've been doing. So there's a lot of issues going on within the elite, and that's one of them.
Well, that's fascinating, Simon. Thanks so much for sharing that. As always, you bring up the most interesting points. Thanks for sharing that. You had another post on your website about watching the Fed. Many people think that the Fed actually is the Federal Reserve in the United States. It's not federal. It's not reserve. It's a Ponzi scheme run by about 13 different banks, which issue the currency of the United States. But they have no legal authority to do it under Article 7 of the Constitution. Only the U.S. Treasury can issue currency. This is a scam that's been going on since 1913. What do you think the Fed is up to, and what do you think eventually will happen to the Fed?
Well, if we think back of our history, when the supposed Titanic, big ocean liner, sank, we have to remember some of the very important people on that boat who lost their lives, very powerful money men, were actually wanting the gold standard. They wanted to keep the gold standard, and with their voices silenced, then America moved from a gold standard to a paper system. John F. Kennedy wanted to go back to a gold standard. Number of people have and have paid the ultimate price. What do I think will happen? I think ultimately you guys will go back to some form of new economy. Whether it's a gold standard at this stage, I don't know. But I certainly think that there's no collapse coming. The information I've received is that there is no collapse, but there will be a readjustment of how it works. And I was hoping for something along those lines regarding the Federal Reserve.
Okay, interesting. I've heard last year I heard rumors about a silver standard, not a gold, but a silver standard, because silver is quite plentiful. And the U.S. government has a lot of silver in which to base a currency.
Yes. But what's happened is that President Trump has used the last 2 years secretly and has bought on behalf of America a huge amount of gold. So America now is in a much stronger position than it was 3, 4, 5 years ago. So if America wanted to return to a metal standard as it stands, it would have to be a combination of gold and silver, and you'd have to try and find a value between the two. But what I'm saying is America's financially stronger now than it was 3, 4, 5 years ago. But whether that means a return to a gold standard, I don't think that they are there yet. But I think the stability within the markets now is such that some debate regarding the work of the Fed or the role of the Fed has got to be happening. I mean, President Trump is putting the Fed under huge pressure to drop interest rates. The Fed, of course, want higher interest rates, and we're watching that play out now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting, your analysis. There have been rumors for years that the 13 private banks of the Federal Reserve have gotten rid of the gold reserves of the United States in the past. I'd love your opinion on that, Simon.
Well, that's exactly true. You know, they did it in mm-hmm. my country. We had a man who was in charge of the money, and he sold off huge amounts of British gold at a rock bottom price. Did mm-hmm. the same in America, so much so that America was nearly bankrupt to the extent mm-hmm. that it couldn't pay its own bills. That's mm-hmm. not the case now, in the sense that America is in a much stronger position. But I don't like the word mm-hmm. enemy, because enemy is not a good word. But the financial enemy of the United States, the real enemy, for want of a better word, unfortunately, is not who you think it would be. It's China. China and America are locked in not just a trade war, they're absolutely locked in a battle to decide basically who's going to run the planet. And what will amaze many people of my age, who of course are brought up on Cold War stories, is that if push comes to shove, Russia would join with America against China. Not in a war, I'm talking about trade. Russia and America are very strongly agreed that China can't be allowed to economically run the world.
Fascinating. Well, I appreciate that perspective, especially after the last, I don't know how many years of nonsense we've had in the U.S. media about this so-called Russian influence on the U.S. Elections, which was false. But thanks for pointing that out. We appreciate that so much, Simon. I've got a question that just came in about how can we learn astral traveling, and is it possible with this to visit our star family?
Right. Astral traveling, you've got what we call out-of-body experience. We've got what we call remote viewing. And then what we've got, you call into the astral. Now, whoever's written this does know what they're talking about, because if you were wanting to connect with your star family, it is through the astral. The point is that the astral is not the terrestrial. The astral you only see in black and white. So if you have an experience and you're seeing in color, you're not astral traveling. You could be remote viewing, or you could have an outer body. So if we are astral traveling, what that actually means is that our physical body stays in the third dimension, but our consciousness can, and it's only very few people that can do this, can move up into higher dimensions. If you go back to Atlantis and the divine feminine women that ruled Atlantis, they were capable of astral traveling, and they got it off to a T. They could really do great things. We're still in a very primitive state, again, because we're having to relearn what we've forgotten. But if you set the intent and you're very clear where you want to go, let's say the Pleiades, for want of a better word here, then, you know, I teach people to get a star map out of the Pleiades, put it on the floor, you know, stick it on the ceiling or the wall. So familiarize yourself with the star pattern, focus on that, and then do some astral traveling. But always also, very important, have a picture of the Earth, because if anything goes wrong, you've got to be able to focus on the Earth and say, that's where I've got to come back. There are a lot of bad people as well as good people out there. And when you leave your own support of your realm and you go somewhere else, you know, you're going to have to mix with the big boys. So always have a photograph of the Earth on a wall so that if anything goes bad, you can say, right, that's my home. That's where I'm going back to. So it's not one of the things I teach, that you can have the star constellation that you're looking for, but always have a picture of good old home.
Wow, that's really good advice. You know, we've been very fortunate during our trip here. Last night, we were visited by Pleiadian commander in the astral. We could see, we could see his outline there at the campfire. I think he'll be around tonight. Is there anything, any message you'd like to give him, or any questions you'd like to ask? And then I'll get back with you with what he says, Simon.
Not really. No, it's okay. No. If he's Pleiadian, you know, he'll know what he's doing.
Sure. Well, they were up there protecting us last night, and we sent them lots of love and light, and then we asked them to do a dance for us, so they started zigzagging a little bit in the sky, back and forth.
The Pleiadians actually like dancing. It's interesting. Not only do they express it in their craft, but they do little dances when they're physically here. So the Pleiadians, of all the fifth dimensional people, are the ones that are the most childish, and I don't mean that rudely. I mean the most excitable, the most happy, the most clean, and they're the ones that will do a little jig or do a little dance, and often they'll do their dancing in their little craft. Yes.
Oh, how fun. Do they like music, and is there any particular music we could play for them tonight around the campfire?
Okay, so the frequencies that we call music here don't really attract them. However, crazily enough, Palladian people on Earth like things like heavy metal and rock. Now, I don't understand that, but that, so maybe there's a frequency there. But Palladian people don't usually like classical music, so they like the
really
stuff. Yeah, generally, and they like that dynamic range. Palladian people like the oomph and the power. They like that because they're dynamic people and they like to get things done. So perhaps they're like us. You could ask one and he or she would say they like this, and one would say another one. But among the Palladian people that I've met, they're quite into dynamic music, not very restful music, I'm afraid.
Wow. Okay, great. If you don't mind, I got another question about diet.
Sure.
I mean, if a Palladian person was here in Mount Shasta, I assume they don't eat meat, right? They're vegetarians, or do they eat some meat? Do they bless the meat first?
No, they don't. To my, the ones I've met or heard of, they do not eat meat at all. No,
okay.
They don't.
No. Okay. Interesting. Mostly a vegetarian diet, is that right? Vegan?
Yes, but remember, there's a splinter group of the Palladians, a splinter group, Alder Deborah or Alder Baron, depending how you pronounce it. The same ones that Billy Meyer saw. Now they do eat meat. They are an offshoot from the Palladians. They look sometimes more like Nordics, but they are an offshoot from the Pleiades, and I believe that they tend to eat meat. whereas the true rootstock of the Palladian people have evolved out of meat eating.
I guess this brings me to another question, my own self. I visited Billy Meyer's Star Center outside Zurich, Switzerland, back in November of 1994. It was an interesting visit. Billy wasn't there, but I met with other people there at the center, and I got a bunch of photographs of Palladians who visited with him. Is he dealing with the main Palladian? I know he's had...
No, he's not.
Had good contact since 1942.
No, absolutely not.
No, he's not. Okay.
No, I mean... These people came to him and said they were Palladian. They said they were.
Right.
And he took them at their word. Because why wouldn't he? The point is, the answer for all of us is in the spacecraft. If you look, and you can get some pretty good, genuine pictures on the internet of Nazi spacecraft 1944, 1945.
Right.
There are, the SS ran them, and there are some, they keep taking them down, but people keep putting them up. And there are some leaked documents from the SS showing them. I've got a copy here. Now, if you look at their spacecraft and then you look at the spacecraft that Billy Meyer was seeing, they are identical. It's not the Nazis coming to visit Billy Meyer. It's the technology is very similar. And these spacecraft are very, very ancient looking. They've actually got rivets in them, believe it or not. So they are.
Oh, wow.
They're using what American people would call anti-gravity. It's not an accurate term, but that's what I think most American people would understand the power plant as an anti-gravity power point, zero-point energy, some people call it. However, because this factional group is not part of the Palladian group, they've been embargoed. So this factional group, which are a splinter group, have had thousands of years of embargo, so their spacecraft are old-fashioned. That's the bottom line. And these were the spacecraft they gave to Hitler. And this factional group has been wanting to interact with a number of people ever since. So it's a fascinating story.
Wow, thank you for explaining that. I saw those pictures too. I wondered why there were rivets on it. The other thing too is that there was a new craft that came out supposedly to Billy Meyer's group in 1976 that had a series of like spears on the top of it was still circular, but on top of the UFO. And in the books that I read about it, UFO Contact from the Pleiades by Wendell Stevens, that craft was able to travel interdimensionally through different time portals and in different dimensions. But of course, if they have a older technology than
that's a completely different spacecraft.
The
Palladians or Palladians did not have portal technology. This splinter group did not have indigenous portal technology. They had it through others who made it available to them. The craft you're referring to was a gift to them from somewhere else. They also had motherships. So they were and are an interesting group, almost for hire. So one faction could say, we would hire you to do this job. We'll hire you to do that job, and we will give you this technology to see that job through. So they have a strong connection to Sumeria. People who have channeled what they thought was ancient Egypt or ancient Sumeria have actually found it's the same group. They use the same form of Sumerian text.
Wow, really? Fascinating. Fascinating. Their language, when they speak, have you heard their language? I've heard it sounds like Native American.
There are groups that are look Native American. I would be very surprised if that was the case, because this splinter group are fourth dimensional. And unless they look like native North American people, they wouldn't have that culture. So if they're sounding like it, then I can't answer that, Ted. I don't get that myself. I think that they're very human-like because they've been excluded from their own Palladian people, so they've had to go find their homes elsewhere. And so Earth is a very interesting home, so they've become more human in their concept. Still telepathic, still like that, but they are for hire. Whereas the Palladian people for true are not for hire. This splinter group is for hire.
Are they? And you mentioned that you were in the fourth dimension, is that correct?
Originally, you see, Palladians, like us, they were in the third dimension, and they evolved over millions of years into the fourth and then the fifth. The Palladians sit just about above the central energy band within the fifth dimension. But when the split occurred, it occurred before the Palladians hit the fifth dimension. So what you've got is you've got this splinter group who are fourth dimensional, and the Palladian people who are fifth dimensional. That is why the technology is so remarkably different between the two groups.
Oh, that's so interesting. If I may ask, does the technology for space travel, does that vary according to different civilizations? For example, the reptilians, what kind of technology do they use? Is it the same, similar, or different structure?
It is different. If you think of the United States of America, God bless it, it will have a policy to sell equipment to its allies, and depending on how friendly an ally you are, you'll get better equipment. So if you're not very friendly, you'll get equipment that's 10-15 years old, but if you're very close, you'll get stuff that's like 2 or 3 years old. Well, the reptilians are the same. They will share that information or that technology with those they trust, and those they don't trust, it's more primitive. So each civilization, if that's the right word here, has its own technology. The problem that why this doesn't work so well is because reptilians can't create. They're not like humans. They're not creators. They are fantastic at replicating and copying. So what the reptilians will do is copy the technology they find, which means it's not often, it doesn't necessarily work with what they've already got. So they have these sort of pockets of technology, standalone technology, where they are brilliant in nanotechnology. They are excellent at making things micro size. The chip, they're very good with the chip, and they're very good with telepathy. So what the reptilians are excellent at doing is having telepathy work with technology. So computers or chips that respond or enhance or build on a telepathic communication system. So that is why artificial intelligence found a way into the reptilian culture, because the reptilians were connecting computers with psychic capability, and that left a frequency which AI could come in on.
Is this the big push now behind AI, especially in a place like China?
This is the war, Ted. This is, I can use that word because I mean it. This is the war. If you're organic, you're on one side of the railroad lines. If you're non-organic, you're on the other side of the railroad lines. Every organic creature is on the same side when it comes to this battle.
Interesting. I think I mentioned this before, but I was in Peru about a year and a half ago in the Lima airport, and there was this huge, I mean, a sign that was 30 feet long and 10-15 feet tall, rectangular sign, with a guy holding a cell phone from Huang in China. The guy looked like he was straight out of the Borg, half human and half machine, and said the future is AI. David Icke says that China has been a reptilian playground since for decades, and well, we're having such a good conversation today, Simon. We've got about a little less than a minute. I wanted to let you know that so you can wrap up your wonderful interview today.
Thank you. Think about Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Terminator films. Here was a case where Hollywood was spun a story, but the director, he had a view on it. I think he went on to make things like Avatar and other films like that. But we were being shown a nightmare scenario. This is the point. Hollywood, this is 1991, the Terminator film, was showing us a nightmare scenario of half man, half robot. We weren't being sold it as this is the way for the future. We were being shown it as this is terrible, this is evil. And what's happened is that message has just been changed to, oh, well, this is a good thing now. So the fact of the matter is
interesting.
We've got to keep human, we've got to stay human, and we've got to stay organic. Very important.
Thank you, Simon, again. Thank you so much for coming on my show today, Simon. Have a wonderful weekend, my friend. I'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay. God bless.
Thank you so much, Simon. All right. Bye-bye. Cheers. Bye-bye. Please stay tuned, my friends, to the next hour. We'll be talking about Mount Shasta, Pleiadians, Sasquatch, and all kinds of fascinating things.